Today is October 26, 2013. This is a Society of Women Engineers grassroots oral history interview with Linda Thomas. The interviewer is Troy Eller. We are at the Society of Women Engineers annual conference in Baltimore, Maryland. Linda is an associate technical fellow and system safety engineer at the Boeing Company. A member of numerous professional and community organizations, Linda is a senior life member of the Society of Women Engineers, a former member of its board of directors, and this evening will be inducted, and last evening was inducted into the College of Fellows. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Troy.
To begin with, can you tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in Orange, New Jersey. My actually hometown is Washington, D.C., but the circumstances where my mom went to be with her mother while she was in her last few weeks of pregnancy, and that's when I was delivered. This one. I thought I silenced it.
Okay. No problem.
Okay.
So, how did you end up back in Washington, D.C.?
Well, my parents' home was in the Washington, D.C. area, and a few months after I was born, my mother returned to Washington, D.C., and that's where I spent the remainder of my childhood.
Okay. Can you tell me about your parents and your family?
Okay, my parents were both born in Virginia. My grandparents were both children and grandchildren of slaves. Mm-hmm. And they were all born between the late 19th and early 20th century. My grandfather, on my mom's side, he was in World War I as a blacksmith, had various odd jobs and served the rest of his career with the U.S. Postal Service. My grandmother was a teacher, and after she got married, she was a housewife, and she also did a lot of community work. Mm-hmm. On my father's side, my grandfather had various jobs. He worked on the railroad and had some other jobs. I'm not too sure. I didn't know him very well. My grandmother, paternal grandmother, was a school teacher. Mm-hmm. So my parents grew up in Virginia. My mom spent most of her childhood in New Jersey, and they met in college at a small historically black college in Lawrenceville, Virginia, called St. Paul's College. And after they got married, my father and my mother both graduated, and they moved to the Washington, D.C. area, where one of my dad's cousins had an electrical contracting business. So my dad worked for this cousin until he was able to work on his own. And he eventually got employment with the D.C. Government as an electrician.
Okay. Did he introduce you to engineering and the technical field, or?
Well, yes and no. He knew that I was curious, and at an early age, I could read, and I could read unassisted. So I could look at his books, but he tried to steer me out of the business. He eventually became a contractor independent. He was a master electrician, but he didn't particularly encourage me to follow in his footsteps, but he didn't dissuade me from doing what I wanted to do in terms of a career.
Okay. How did you become interested in?
My mom started out working when I was about 8. She was a administrative assistant in the D.C. public schools, and then she got an opportunity to work for the dean of the civil engineering department at Howard University. So I was somewhat interested in engineering because I liked problem solving. I was pretty inquisitive, pretty fearless, and I felt that I could make a difference there. I had some misgivings after observing the Boeing bust during a trip to Seattle, but I changed my mind shortly after I started my freshman year at Howard.
Okay. And so you chose to go to Howard because your mother worked there, you had that connection already?
Well, that was most of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have any siblings?
Yes, I have two brothers.
Okay, okay.
They were both here last night.
Okay, excellent. Can you tell me a little bit about them?
Okay, my older brother, Ralph, is an analyst with an investment company. And he deals with primarily systems architecture for banking systems. Mm-hmm. And my younger brother, William, is an employee with the U.S. Postal Service.
Okay, okay. Now, I read that you, after you graduated from high school, you didn't head directly to college. You pursued music for a while?
No, actually, I went straight to college from high
school.
You did?
Okay, okay.
No, I spent a lot of time in my junior high and high school years involved in music.
Okay, okay. What instrument did you play?
I played clarinet after mm-hmm. a lot of experimentation with other instruments. I started out with clarinet. I took my younger brother's trumpet and figured out how to play that. I tried oboe until my music teacher said, it's making your embouchure and your clarinet go too flat. Mm-hmm. I tried and taught myself how to play bassoon, but that was fun. Although there were a lot of really good bassoonists at school, so I knew that my opportunities were limited. So I decided to master the clarinet, and then when I discovered how to play the bass clarinet, that offered even more opportunities, because at that age and stage, I know a lot of people want to sit first chair, but I knew that the bass clarinet is usually the person sitting in the last chair. But there's lots of solo work there for bass clarinet, so I gravitated toward it, and I felt that I found my voice in the orchestra.
Okay, okay. When did you start playing?
I was about 11.
Okay, okay. Do you still play?
Yes, I do.
Fantastic. So when you moved on to Howard, how did you choose your major?
Well, after my observations over the last 3 or 4 years of what was happening with engineering with the downturn, I decided to just look at other strengths I had, and that was veterinary medicine. I was really interested in taking care of animals. I had several pets, though I had some misgivings because I was told about the relative limited opportunities in terms of graduate work in veterinary medicine. And I think what I did was I majored in pre-med. I said, well, I have two options. If I can't get into veterinary school, maybe I'll go to med school. But I still could not see myself as what type of doctor I would like to be. Mm-hmm. So I still continued to take the math and science, but also discovered that with my major, I wasn't going to get credit for the calculus course. So that steered me back into engineering.
Okay. Okay. And then you pursued chemical engineering?
Yes.
Had you taken chemistry classes in high school?
Yes. Okay. Oh, I was always interested in chemistry. The story goes, my older brother received a biology set for Christmas 1 year, and I was insanely jealous because he had the pickled animals and he had the dissecting kit, and I said, I want some of that. So I knew that I couldn't ask for a biology set, so I said, I want a chemistry set. So I begged for several years until one day my parents gave me this huge chemistry set, mm-hmm. and away I went into the basement.
Okay. What did you work on in the basement?
Every experiment I could play with.
Okay.
Except the one that really made my mom angry. I tried the hydrogen sulfide smell. Sulfur and I think paraffin, and my mom opened the basement door. She got the sniff, and she said, "Linda, what is that?" And it was a really cold day, and she told me to open the basement door and get the smell out.
So, when did you enter into Howard?
I started Howard right after I graduated in 1975, but I didn't change my major to engineering until 1977.
Okay, okay. Were there many women in the program at that time?
Believe it or not, yes. Mm-hmm. Howard was making great strides in recruiting women to be in the engineering program. And my recollection was by the time I graduated, the chemical engineering class was about 50% women.
Okay. Okay. Can you tell me about any of your memorable experiences at Howard?
Well, we had a fluid mechanics lab, and I discovered that I was a very hands-on person, very visual, mm-hmm. and discovered that some of the experiments did not work as planned. So my advisor, who was also the dean of the chemical engineering department, gave me a work-study job to go and help repair some of the equipment in the fluid mechanics lab. Mm-hmm. So that was really a valuable experience, because that way, by the time it was over, you know, we had working equipment again mm-hmm. for some of the experiments.
Right.
But it was always fascinating, because that way I could get to see how chemical engineering practices were put into use.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Did you have any mentors or any professors that particularly helped to guide your direction?
I don't recall of too many. I always talked with the professors. There was a Dr. Katz. He used to give me some words of wisdom every now and then. I was a pretty shy person at that time, so I didn't go out seeking help a lot. I would find tutors if I needed help. I would say I had more peers that were helping me than someone that was particularly older.
Okay, okay.
Although there was one relationship I had with, she was a professor of civil engineering, and I would babysit her children. So I think watching her as a mother gave me the wisdom to say, no, I can do this too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. Can you tell me about some of the classes that you had during that time?
Okay, so I transferred in after 2 years of pre-med, so mm-hmm. I had gotten most of the math out of the way. I had procrastinated on the physics, so I took that during the summer. That was probably more fun than taking it during the year. And the chemical engineering classes were the basic, doing the basic calculations, the thermodynamics, heat transfer, mass transfer, kinetics, mm-hmm. process controls, design projects.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had class in computational science, some of the early computer science, the punch cards, and the teletype. I remember I was taking physical chemistry, and we had those teletype machines, and they had this thing called a teletype football. So when I was through with my PChem work, I would go play football on there just for some excitement. And that's when I first started getting very interested in computers and programming.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a summer job where I did some basic programming to understand some process controls.
Okay, okay. What organizations were you involved with?
I was involved with Howard's SWE section. Mm-hmm. I think it started around the time I was there. And we did a lot of community service. We did activities. We had a very heterogeneous group with we had males and females in our SWE section.
Mm-hmm.
I had not gone to any SWE conferences, although I was also a member of NSBE. I helped with chartering that chapter, and I did go to some of the NSBE conferences.
Mm-hmm. What do you think you got from your involvement in those organizations?
Well, I knew that there was a life after college with both organizations.
Okay. Okay. Did you have plans for your career at this time? Like, did you know where you wanted your career to go?
Yes, I did. Even though I was enjoying my chemical engineering work, I also was having a growing interest in computers, but didn't necessarily want to do programming or computer science as a job. I wanted to figure out how I could integrate the two. Mm-hmm. So I was keeping my options pretty wide open when I left. I said, well, hey, I'll work in the chemical area, but I also want to understand how computers interface with engineering.
Okay. Okay. How did you structure your job search? Like, tell me what your job search was like.
That was a pretty good year because the next year was not so positive. I didn't have a problem with job offers. I had five, but I picked the one that was Washington State because I had been to Seattle several times, and I said, I really want to live on the West Coast after I graduate. Mm-hmm. So I picked a job with Kaiser Aluminum as a process engineer at their Tacoma site.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that job? What were your responsibilities?
Okay. The Tacoma plant was a World War II vintage plant, and they had what is called a pot mine. So the way aluminum is made, it's an electrochemical process. It's not aqueous. It occurs at about 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And I think they had about several hundred cells, and they called them pot mines. Mm-hmm. And my role there was to ensure that there were no disruptions in operations. If sometimes the pot lines, they were as old as they were, they would eventually break down and cause contamination of the aluminum, and we had to take them offline and then repair the pot line cell and then put it back into service. So keeping track of all that. Mm-hmm. And then watching the manufacturing of the pot line cathodes and anodes. So.
Did you enjoy the work?
Yeah, it was fascinating. Mm-hmm. It was very dirty. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of coal and carbon dust. We use sodium fluoride, so there's fluoride dust. And it etched the windows of my new car. Because there's a little car wash, you could drive your car through and it would wash off the dust, but over time it did cause some spotting on the windshield and mm-hmm. some of my side windows, but I wasn't terribly concerned about that. It was basic transportation.
Mm-hmm. So it was your first job out of college.
Right.
Were you the only were there other women there, other women engineers there?
There was one, but she wasn't there very long.
Okay. Okay. What was that experience like, being one of very few?
I think having grown up as an only daughter kind of insulated me from feeling isolated. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't at that stage very conscious about it. I knew I was a female engineer. I knew I'd probably be the only one. There was another African-American male who was in engineering. Mm-hmm. And you know, we talked a little bit because we were in different areas. He was, I believe he was an electrical engineer. So we would talk occasionally. But overall, you know, I just came to work. I had some family and I loved outdoors, so I was able to take care of myself outside of the job, but never paid much attention to it. I think that first year, I'm trying to establish myself and finding a way of how to work in that at that site. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I also had to work closely with the hourly people, so I tried to build relationships with them to see how we can help.
Mm-hmm. Did that go well?
Well, it went well, except what I wasn't watching was the political issues. And I even wrote a term paper in graduate study. What happened at the time I got hired, the Bonneville Power Administration had increased their power rates to industrial users. At the same time, there was an aluminum glut. So I remember there was a Time article when one of our managers was staying outside the plant, and they had these stacks of aluminum billets that they were not selling.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, the aluminum price, I think, had depressed. They weren't able to sell, and they started laying off people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of a layoff in May 1982.
Okay.
But looking back at it after doing my graduate study, I was like, that was probably the best thing that happened to me.
Okay. What happened after the layoff? What did you do then?
So I wasn't going to move back home. That was like a non-starter for me. My mom's brother lived in Seattle, and he said, hey, could you come live with me and my wife? And I stayed with them until I found another job.
Mm-hmm.
And during that interim, I took some classes at the University of Washington, and I found out jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Did some job searching, but in 1982, there was a serious recession, and jobs were hard to find. My friends in Washington couldn't believe that it was going on, but I think following classes did suffer not finding as many job offers that year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What classes did you take?
I took an analytical chemistry class,
mm-hmm.
and I took a linear algebra class.
Okay. And you said that taking those classes changed your idea of what you wanted to do in the future, or?
Not really. Okay. I figured I could always use more chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And I can always use more math.
Okay. So how did you find the job, your next job?
The job at Boeing?
Mm-hmm.
So I had lunch with my aunt and some of her friends, and one of them said, oh, you'd probably be perfect. You know, they're looking for people at Boeing right now. So she said, if you have a resume, you know, give it to me. So I gave her my resume, and I got a call one day saying, you know, come in for an interview. I said, okay. And I met with people from it's the Parts, Materials, and Processes Organization. And I had a group interview, I think it was in September of 1983.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What did you like about that interview and about Boeing?
Well, I found that they were really trying to find a place for me.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to know as much as they could about me. They took me on a tour of one of their research labs, and I got to meet some of the people there.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really kind of interesting, I tell people about how music kind of plays into it. So they were asking me about my interests, and one man, his name is Charlie Johnson, he was saying, well, you know, what type of hobbies do you have? And I said, oh, I play the clarinet. He said, well, I play the violin. So we got into a little conversation with music, and several years later, we played in the same orchestra together. So
mm-hmm.
I felt that having some common interests does go a long way in a job interview.
Okay. So when you were hired at Boeing, what was your first job and your first responsibilities there?
So my first job, I was working as a materials and processes engineer on one of their programs. And I was looking at primarily structural materials and electrical materials. We were doing work on old systems. We were trying to either improve the reliability of some systems,
mm-hmm.
or repairing other systems.
Okay. Did you enjoy that position?
It was good. It was good background. I was definitely the only female in that group. And I felt that I had a lot to learn. Boeing was a really large company, so I had to figure out the culture and what was expected and not expected. And there were a couple of guys that took me under their wing and kind of showed me the ropes.
Mm-hmm. Would you consider them to be mentors or?
Somewhat.
Somewhat. Mm-hmm. At that time, did you see where you wanted your career to go at Boeing?
No.
You were just learning.
Yeah, I was just learning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you tell me how you progressed through Boeing?
So So I was in this first group for about a year and a half. Then I went to the Central Materials and Processes Organization, and I was there for a couple of years working on some chemical reductions. So that was my first introduction to looking at environmental regulations as it relates to the types of materials we use. And then I got involved in corrosion protection and control, and that's where I started developing my expertise. After I was in that group for a while, I got a call to come work on the Advanced Tactical Fighter prototype. And during that time, I was working on coding development, but what happened was one of my colleagues was terminally ill, and my manager said, you know, Bob's probably not coming back, so we wanted to know if you could work the corrosion full-time after he's gone. And, you know, by that time, we hadn't seen Bob much anymore, so I said I would do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How long were you in that position?
About 2.5 years mm-hmm. until the airplane flew.
Okay. Where did you head after that?
So I was doing some internal research and development on adhesives technology, and then through my conversations with people about chemical reduction, one of the environmental engineering managers asked me if I would come and work in his group to do some projects. I said, sure. So that was my first career change. So I moved into environmental engineering mm-hmm. in January of 1991. And I wasn't there very long because I got a call from a friend of one of my friends who was asking me a question about hot tub chemicals and interactions. So it was just a casual conversation. And I didn't think anything of it because we were just talking home things. And then one day he called and said, you know what, my manager's looking for someone who has a really good chemical background because they're looking for someone to work on this project. I said, okay. So I said, well, I entertained the idea for an interview. And I talked with some system safety managers, and they were telling me about these projects where the U.S. government is asking their contractors to account for the types of hazardous materials they use. Mm-hmm. So I was asked to work on the F-22's hazardous materials program, and I said I'd take it. So before I did that, I took a trip to Europe for a couple of weeks to just see. I went to 7 countries, so that was kind of fun. And then I started this new job in mm-hmm. November 91.
Mm-hmm. And you've been in system safety since then?
Yes. I'm still kind of in system safety until I transferred to this new job in May 2012.
Mm-hmm. What job is that?
Right now, I'm the Defense Systems Chemical Risk and Management Leader. And my responsibility in this job is to look at how regulations will drive chemical obsolescence or bans, and how will they affect our product line.
Okay. Are you enjoying that job?
Absolutely, it's great.
Okay. What do you like about it?
Well, just like the job I took in 1991, no one had done it before. Mm-hmm. So I had to come up with how to make this work.
Okay.
So it's definitely been an enjoyable challenge.
Mm-hmm. What memorable experiences have you had at Boeing?
Many. Oh, wow. Well, I think seeing airplanes fly mm-hmm. for the first time is always a memorable experience, especially if you've worked on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen at least two that I've had my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
The relationships I've had with people. And then also mentoring others and seeing them succeed.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about those relationships you had?
Okay, so when I started out in system safety, the manager there, he really wanted to mentor me. And I didn't talk too much about my SWE experience because I had kind of dropped out of SWE, mainly because when I was working for Kaiser, I was in Tacoma. Pacific Northwest was based in Seattle, so I really didn't engage with the section. So John he was not my manager, he was probably my second level manager. And he was really excited, you know, once he met me and saw me at work. And he said, you know, he got me involved in a leadership development program at Boeing. It was called the Mentor Program. And he really spent time talking with me about what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go with my career, what were the possibilities in system safety. You know, we're still in touch today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you deal with professional challenges?
Can you clarify what?
I guess instances when maybe you faced a roadblock or were not, or when your career wasn't going the way that you wanted it to?
Well, I would talk it over with some of my friends. One of the things that I'm very fortunate to have were a circle of female friends in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And there are four of us. We all were in Seattle at the same time. And I think it was like shortly after I got married. And we're still buddies now. In fact, it was about 3 years ago we all went to Washington, D.C. and spent the weekend together. But we're always in contact with each other. So, you know, talking with them, and there was one that I talked to a lot because we were in the same organization all this time.
Mm-hmm.
So we would just trade notes on, you know, what's happening, what's the issue. And I also learned that, you know, in the corporate culture, you have to be really careful about how you approach these challenges because you definitely know that there are some people that may be out for your best interest, and there are some that will probably not have as much leverage.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at what are the battles that I'm willing to face. I learned quite often, you have to pick your battles.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my approach, I don't have anything that I felt that was a very, something that was very stressful. I just realized I had to pick those battles and figure out how to deal with them. And I think my way of coping was dark humor.
Okay. Has your career turned out like you expected when you started?
Well, when I was about 5 or 6, I knew I wanted to be a scientist and I knew I wanted to be a musician. Mm-hmm. I was influenced very early with that. And I think I got there. I'm pretty happy. I think I got a really good obituary right now.
There's the dark humor. Okay. You rejoined SWE as a professional, I believe, in 1997?
Right.
So can you tell me why you decided to rejoin SWE?
I was pushed by another SWE member. Vi Brown was my classmate at Howard, and she kept asking me about joining SWE, and I said, well, the visibility at work was just not there. I didn't know anyone who was a SWE member at that time. And Vi just said, well, no, just go check it out. And I guess it was one day, I don't know how I found out, this was pre-internet and everything, but I discovered there was a meeting that was occurring close to my house. And at that time, I was about 4 or 5 months pregnant. So I was pretty cautious about where I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I went to this meeting and I was really welcomed warmly. And I said, well, and they were having a membership recruitment. I think SWE had a recruitment campaign that year. So I said, okay, I'll join.
Mm-hmm. Did you become involved, like, in section leadership roles right away, or did you?
Yeah, I did. I was trying to figure out, how did I do this when I'm about to have a baby?
Mm-hmm.
So I told them I would get involved with trying to find speakers for their speakers bureau. And so I was keeping a log of, you know, who was available and who could speak on behalf of the section.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did that for several years. And I think I migrated into, I think one of my sweet friends said, you know, you should run for an office. And I'm thinking, well, I said, let me think about this. Because I think about that time, it was about 2000, I was setting my eyes on going to graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And I hesitated to graduate school for a long time because I wasn't sure whether I was able to get in. And I talked with University of Southern California, and which is now called Missouri Science and Technology University. They had a joint contract with Boeing to offer a systems engineering master's program. And I recognized that being in systems engineering would kind of meld my interest in computational engineering and the work that I'm already doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I ran for the vice president of professional development, and I remember one of their hallmark programs they had was called the Leadership Incentive Program. And we borrowed it from, I think it was SWE Detroit had a similar program where we would look at members' activities during the year, and we would come up with awards and giveaways. We would give away one SWE membership for a year, but we also had other things. So one of the things I learned from that, I got to know a lot of people through that program because now I knew who they were, what types of things did they do, and what were their interests.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that to be very valuable. But then how about running for president? I said, well, you know, I'm still in grad school. I don't want to, you know, overtax myself at this point. But I said, look, when I'm closer to the end of my degree, I'll run for president.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I ran in 2004. And I served 2 years as president.
Mm-hmm. What were your goals as president?
Well, the first year was, we were coming up on our 50th anniversary, and I wanted to promote the section history. So we had a series of events aimed toward knowing more about the section's heritage, who were some of our pioneers, because we had quite a few pioneers. In fact, we had one living charter member of that section among us. Then I had another group who was interested in arranging an auction to raise money for scholarships. So that was, I remember it was Barb, her name is Barb Darnell now, Genevieve Hochbjor. They put on a fabulous auction. We raised quite a bit of money for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that for Pacific Northwest was the largest section in Region J, and I felt that we really need to, one, diversify our leadership so that we bring people from all over, because sometimes there was a tendency for a lot of people from Boeing to be members, and I really wanted to see a bigger cross-section of members. I also was passionate about finding outreach, coming up with our own programs, and members had developed a program development grant to do a shadow day, mm-hmm. which is very successful, and we did that a year. The last thing that I had done was, this is going back to the inclusion, I was part of a group that was advocating splitting the section for the people who were south of King County, Washington, and the Kitsap Peninsula, because we knew that was too far away to drive. And So that last year I was working on the section charter for, which is now the South Puget Sound section.
Mm-hmm.
So they chartered my first year as region governor.
Okay. What led you to become region governor?
I was asked to. So I started going to region conferences around 2003. And I found it to be a lot of fun. I mean, it was like a family vacation. My husband and son would go, they would go play, and then I would go to the region conferences. And that's when I started getting involved with region work. Then I was asked about running for lieutenant governor. And then while I was lieutenant governor, I helped with the first region conference in Alaska, which was an awesome experience. Mm-hmm. I had never been to Alaska, so I was just so excited to go there. And I actually spent a few days after exploring Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So my predecessor was very helpful. She had actually moved out of the Seattle area. She had a new job. So we spent a lot of time together to bring me up to speed as region governor. So I had an incredible transition experience.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your roles as region governor?
Oh, I think it's primarily to keep people connected.
Mm-hmm.
And we had region conferences were, well, they were very small intimate affairs, but the tide turned around the time I was region governor. The first year we had a joint region conference, that's the first time in Las Vegas, in January of 2007. So I spent some time working with Allison and Fran, who were the co-chairs of the conference, and like looking for sponsorships, finding speakers, encouraging our members to attend, and just working on some of that general planning.
Mm-hmm.
So it was well attended.
Okay.
So I think that was that first year, because I was region governor for 4 years.
What were the, did the conferences grow after
Yes,
that?
They did. Because the following year we had a conference in Portland, Oregon. I think we had like almost 150 participants,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome. It was a beautiful venue in Vancouver, Washington, and we had so much excellent corporate support for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the following year we had one in, it was at the University of Washington, again, you know, over 100 people, and I can't remember the fourth year. I want to say Corvallis, but I don't quite remember.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been Corvallis, because I remember, I think Vi Brown was president, I think she came down for it.
Okay. So after you were the Region J governor in 2011, you were elected to the SWE board of directors.
Right.
Can you tell me about that experience?
I'm trying to remember who asked me to run for DR. It was a very difficult year for me personally, because at the time I turned in my nomination package and my father became ill.
Mm.
And I don't remember too much about that, except, you know, I turned in my nomination package and I talked with the nominations chair about what was going on. And it's still a little bit cloudy, even though it was not very long ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you were on the board of directors, what was your role?
Well, the DR role is to help preserve the vitalities of the regions and their sections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a region governor procedure that we use, and I helped with that when I was a region governor. One of the things that I had put together, because I did it as a section president to orient my successor, I said, well, we have a a calendar, what types of things to expect each month of the year. So I developed one for the region governors, and we put that into the region governor procedure. But I was responsible for meeting with the region governors, passing on information from the board, also working on initiatives that came out from the strategic planning, you know, and planning for our region meetings. We would have our region meetings at the conference. We also had the region conferences, and also planning whether I was going to attend any.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then this year you became the mall rep?
Yes, I'm the members at large rep for Region J.
Okay. Okay. How did you get into that position?
I think I was asked. And I became a member at large at the request of my predecessor, Allison, who was my region governor. She said, Linda, you know, one of the things to think about is that, you know, you're coming from a really large section, and it was probably like a work-life balance issue. Pacific Northwest continues to be the largest section in Sweden. I think they are the largest section in Sweden, not just the largest section in Region J. And she felt that the other sections in J, and I think we have one that borders about 100 members, the rest of them are less than 50. And she said, you know, being a MAL is going to give you the freedom to work with all those sections.
Okay. Okay. So what opportunities have you gotten to work with all those sections?
Well, when I was a region governor, it was great, because now, since I knew I couldn't get committed to do anything for Pacific Northwest, it left me with a lot of time to work with the individual region governors. Like, I would make phone calls with them, see how they were doing. Read their reports, see if there's anything I can help them with. Try to get to know people on a more personal level.
Mm-hmm.
Helping them with the region conferences. One of the things we took a best practice from Region H was use the career fair to recruit and for sponsorships during the career fair.
Mm-hmm.
And that went a long way, because we had companies that had come out to J for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. You were talking about work-life balance, and, you know, balancing SWE with, you know. Can we jump back and talk about your family?
Sure.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that you had met your husband. When was that?
I met him about 30 years ago.
Okay. Okay. How did you know him?
Well, I didn't. Well, this is going for posterity. Do I have to go into details?
No.
He would kill me. Well, we just didn't meet conventionally.
Okay.
And we worked at Boeing. Well, no, he did not work at Boeing when I first met him, but eventually he did.
Okay. Okay.
And we got married in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an engineer. He's a mechanical engineer. He went to the University of Washington.
Okay. And when did you have your children?
We just had the one in 1997.
Okay. Okay. So that was the same year that you rejoined SWE.
Right.
Can you tell me about balancing that, you know, dual engineering couple and work and SWE?
Well, my husband's been an exceptionally good father. Mm-hmm. And I have to give him a lot of credit. And he definitely wanted to be involved with raising Grant. And he took about a month off. Well, I have a story that I will put on the record. So we were in the prenatal class, and one of our classmates delivered early. And I had planned to work up till the due date. And he said, so when he heard this woman's story, he said, "What day are you taking off?" I said, "I'm working up until the due date." He said, "Oh no, you're going to take off earlier than that." And I said, "Why?" Because, you know, my pregnancy was really unstressful. I was fine. I was exercising several times a week, and all my vital signs were good. And so I decided, okay, I'll take off 10 days before the due date.
Mm-hmm.
No baby showed up. But I wasn't dissuaded. So but at the same time, I had computer access to work, so I could check my email. If anybody was looking for me, I was somewhat accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, that was October 9th was my last day at work. So the 19th came and went, nothing was happening. The doctors looked, baby seemed to be doing okay. And they said, well, if this goes on any longer, we'll have to induce. And I said, okay. I didn't know what that meant. And so they tried one form of induction. That didn't work, so they gave me the Pitocin on November 3rd, and Grant showed up early the next morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long did you take off of work?
Let's see. It was almost 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
I had saved up vacation. I was really sick, so I had lots of sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I had plenty of time, and being gone during the Christmas holiday, then I had an extra couple of weeks.
Sure.
Because Boeing shuts down during the Christmas holiday.
Mm-hmm. How did you and your husband manage your household? How did you split responsibilities?
When Grant was a baby, I worked part-time for about a year. And we found an excellent at-home care, which was minutes from our house.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have to travel a lot at that time. And my husband's office was about 15 minutes. So we would take turns. One of us would drop Grant off, the other would pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, I think my husband would drop him off on his way to work, and I would pick him up coming home. And it was just like 3 days a week. And I would be home on Mondays and Fridays.
Mm-hmm. Were your bosses accommodating to that schedule? Or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They told me I had limits to how long I could do that, but they were pretty much accommodating because they knew that if I wasn't at work, that I still had computer access and I could see what was going on and respond to people, make mm-hmm. phone calls occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Boeing had started mother's rooms, lactation rooms,
mm-hmm.
and the first day I was there, I looked for one, and then I established one in the building that I worked in, and then another one of my coworkers needed lactation care, so we found a second room, so it worked out great.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit was having been able to nurse him as long as I did, the child was really sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I have all kinds of sick leave because I had a fairly healthy child.
Right.
Because I remember one year, he was in kindergarten, there was strep throat going in, and no, Grant wasn't even sick. I was like, great.
So. Okay. Where do you want to go with your career in the future?
Oh, I've already figured that out. I always tend to be visionary about some of the things I would like to do because I know there are ways to make an impact. So I'm involved in the school district in their STEM advisory board, and this is trying to help the educators in the district with their goals towards STEM education. And we just met, I think we met the day before I left town. And then I also teach an engineering orientation class at South Seattle Community College. So I'm telling them about all the possibilities in engineering, understanding why you take the courses, talk about accreditation, what types of careers are available, and we do a few fun projects.
Mm-hmm. How did that opportunity come up?
Well, remember the four ladies I was telling you about that we get together a lot? Well, one of them is a teacher at South Seattle. And at that time, they were looking for someone who was in industry that could come and talk and give students insight into engineering from an industrial perspective.
Okay.
So she had, there was one person she had asked. He could do it for a while, but his job details were becoming too busy. He wasn't able to do that. And then she said, well, you know, do you want to try it? And I said, oh, sure. So I tried it. I started that about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Have you been enjoying it?
Absolutely. It's been great. Mm-hmm. Because it's forcing me to be even more organized with my time. Because, you know, grading papers, working with the schedules, being involved with the students.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you see many women who are interested in that program?
There are. One of the things I'm noticing, and I think I had talked with someone last night about this, there's a trend for students to look at community college as a stepping stone to a four-year institution rather than going straight into a four-year. And I believe I have about half a dozen women in my class this year.
Mm-hmm.
For this quarter, I teach two quarters a year.
Mm-hmm.
And their interests are very widely. So when I go to the career fair, I just pick up career information and take it back to the classroom for students to peruse.
Okay, okay. Do you think that the female students you see, do they come into the class with the same level of experience, of mechanical experience or class experience, that the male students do? Do you think like they come in on an equal footing?
I would say for the most part, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. Looking at SWE, why did you decide to be so involved in leadership? I mean, people kept asking you, but why did you say yes?
Well, I found that if you can help people succeed, then that can be your success too.
Mm-hmm.
And just by understanding the organization, believing in the mission is key to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I enjoyed the leadership experience, but it also told me what I really wanted to do in my own career. I had wavered between being a manager or being a technical person, and I decided that if I want to do management, I can do it in SWE. I'll keep the technical part of my career intact.
Okay, okay. What skills have you gotten from SWE?
Well, learning how to delegate,
mm-hmm.
Being organized with my time. Sometimes I fail because I would be up until all hours of the night trying to write a report or try doing some other problem solving.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What have been the most interesting projects that you've worked on with SWE, or like the things that are most meaningful to you?
You know, I think it was helping the regions with their region conferences, because I got to know the people on a more personal level. We would be in contact because we would have to set up the conference dates early, and then we would go through the planning cycle and then have the region conference. And then I would, in just watching the success that follows from it. Because I remember with the conference in 2008 in Portland, they were able to make enough money toward starting an endowment. I think they started their endowment this year.
Okay, okay.
And talking with the with the sponsors, thanking them for being part of SWE. So I just found it to be gratifying at a personal level to make sure that people felt like they were needed and included in the process.
Okay. Can you tell me about some of the, what would you like What do you think SWE should do in the future?
Well, some of the things I think SWE should look at in the future is looking at their demographics a little more closely. One, I think there's still going to be a growing trend of students that will not matriculate into four-year colleges. You will see a growing number going to community colleges, particularly with the expenses of four-year institutions. And I would strongly encourage the collegiate interest group process for community colleges, and also looking at re-entry community college scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
The other area is new ideas for K through 12. I know that the crucial age is that middle school, grades 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas of what you think SWE could do for those age ranges?
Okay, for the community colleges, I think just promoting the collegiate interest group process, coming up with a program to talk with community college students. I should have started a section that, or a SIG at South Seattle. I really need to get some more help on that one. But I know we have started one. We have one that's in Everett, Washington. I think they're applying to be a SIG. And this is a very active group of students. I'm very impressed with them.
Mm-hmm.
On the terms of the scholarships, I guess I would have to talk with the scholarships and the Board of Trustees about that.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are reentry scholarships, but I think we may need more visibility. I don't know what the exact trends are, but I think when we look at the numbers a little more closely, I think the need is going to increase rather than decrease.
Mm-hmm.
And for K through 12, I think probably trying to use either social media or working with educators and their parents about the importance of STEM. Even if they don't go into an engineering degree, they do need to understand science, because people who have a basic foundation in science can make better decisions when they vote, make decisions on infrastructure projects in their communities, and also in the politicians they select toward our local, state, and federal policies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know that you are involved in a number of other professional and community groups.
Right.
Can you talk about your involvement in those organizations and, why you choose to devote time to them?
I think it's more the personal interest in the mission of the group.
Mm-hmm.
I spent some time with the National Society of Black Engineers, primarily, for promoting STEM in the African-American community. I think one of the things we didn't talk about earlier was about my being an associate technical fellow. And when I was elected to the fellowship, I was trying to figure out if there was any other women or African-American women in the group. I knew there were quite a few women in the group, but I found out that I was number two.
Mm-hmm.
Since the program started in 1989. So, my goal is to seek out women who want to go on the technical track and aspire to being a technical fellow, so at least I can reel those numbers too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm involved. So NSBE is one channel, because I do meet women at Boeing who want to be in the fellowship, and I've offered to be a mentor to them and offer guidance to them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, someone approached me at the conference about that and wanted to meet with me tomorrow. I'm also peripherally involved with the System Safety Society, so that's a profession that I stay in, primarily for academic reasons. One of my projects right now, I'm on a book club reviewing a safety book, and we have three sessions. It's about a 500-page book, so I'm reading, taking notes, and we have a session next week and another one in a couple of weeks, so that's been pretty rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not as actively involved. I'm probably like a member at large with them. And then I spend my time, my other time with the orchestra. And it gets interesting when I have to juggle travel for business or travel for SWE with a concert schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I just happen to know who might be able to play if I'm not.
Okay. Have you always been able to find time to play, to practice, you know?
I do all kinds of concentrated practicing in weird places. Like, my iPad is a new tool.
Okay.
I bought an iPad a couple of years ago and kept it in a box for a month because I couldn't figure out what to do with it. And it turned out that I was playing this with the orchestra and this concerto, which was just it was one of the most technically difficult things I had seen in my life. I mean, and I had to go on a business trip. So I found out there is a library you can download sheet music. So I downloaded the score. I bought the music on iTunes. So I'm sitting there using anything that is cylindrical to pretend that I'm playing so I can work my way through the piece and work through a difficult part. So I can practice on the road. It is not by means the real thing, but it's just enough to keep myself mentally aware. I call it situational awareness in the orchestra because you're either playing as a soloist, which you really are, because there's only going to be one bass clarinet in the orchestra, and you're looking at how do I fit in with the low strings versus the other clarinets or the bassoons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been rewarding, and it's something I said I was going to do ever since I was a little kid. So I feel like, you know, I'm living my dream. I really am.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you would like to share or talk about? Something that we haven't covered?
I guess one of the things I've always talked about is about being fascinated as a child, and I try to bring that to my own child.
Mm-hmm.
About fascination with science, taking him to science museums, letting him run free until it was time to go home, and then that was another thing. Also, I was really fortunate that early in my childhood there were people that looked out for me. I remember, I think it was either fifth or sixth grade, our science teachers came into the classroom, and there was one that had me do wet bulb temperature, and I had to take a thermometer outside and calculate the wet bulb temperature. I had to do that like every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started taking French when I was in third grade, so I had a teacher that was really interested in making sure that I could understand French. I can't speak it as well as I'd like, but I still understand the language, and my son's taking French right now, so there are times he'll let me get involved, but
mm-hmm.
I get involved on my own. And my music colleagues have talked about, we talked about STEM, we said let's turn it into STEAM, because the arts are integral to helping children understand science and technology aspects. Even if it's the visual arts or it's the sound arts,
mm-hmm.
they're both essential.
Okay. You talked about, you know, taking your son to the museums. How old is he now?
He's 15.
Have you been encouraging him to pursue engineering since you're both engineers, or Is he not interested?
He's showing some interest.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you will, like, strongly encourage him, or?
I will strongly encourage him because I told him if he wants to have a good foundation for whatever he wants to do afterwards, you know, having a STEM degree will help him accomplish that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've told my students, just from my observations, is that if you want to go to medical school, you can still major in engineering. Because the med school admissions typically look at a diversity of their class pool. And having an engineering degree does take quite a bit of diligence. And it's going to be out of the box from what a person majoring in pre-med would be doing. So they know the type of curriculum engineers go through. Mm-hmm. And I've known quite a few that have gone to law school or medical or dental school after an engineering degree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else you would like to share?
I think the legacy I want to leave, mm-hmm. because I think I wasn't out for leadership because I wanted to be a leader. I did it because I felt I could fulfill a need for other people to succeed. Mm-hmm. And when I look at what the motivations for running for an office, I had to look at, well, how much time is this going to do for me? What can I be effective at? Mm-hmm. And I have had times where I've turned down positions of, you know, potential leadership positions because I knew that I couldn't possibly balance that with the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I had declined to run for the board a second year, which turned out to be a good thing because a lot of things happened in my life that year. Well, I had to change jobs toward the end of my last year on the board, family illnesses, and just life transitions. So sometimes things happen for a reason, mm-hmm. and I try to be visionary about it. Mm-hmm. And I think the other legacy I leave is that of persistence. I know that sometimes things can be so difficult that a person might think about giving up. And my message is, don't ever give up. Don't let a circumstance drive the rest of your career. And I know I didn't really step away from my career when I was out on maternity leave, but I knew I had to have a plan coming back in. And I knew that if circumstances had changed, I was always going to have a plan. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I teach my students, always have a plan for what you want to do. You can always change it, but just have the basic structure in place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much for doing the interview.
Well, thank you very much, Tori.
I've enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure.
And this is the end of the interview.